Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. This meeting is for Tuesday, January 29th. We're going to hear SB 18 and SB 19. Obviously, we won't be taking action on these bills today. They're the two budget bills. We're going to be hearing the supplemental later. Is that this week that we're going to be hearing? Next week. And mental health and the university will be heard a little later this week. Present at the table today are Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Meyer, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Kelly, myself, and Karen Rayfield from the administration, Director of OMB. If you could come up and just kind of walk us through, first of all, SB 19, please, and just give us a general overview of this. And if we could go ahead, are you comfortable with us? Excuse me, just a minute. Are you comfortable with us asking questions as you're presenting, or would you rather we hold them until the end?
Mr. Chairman, I'm fine with questions at any time.
Okay, just go ahead and ask questions, committee.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the director of OMB. We have a suite of appropriation bills that were introduced for your consideration this session, Senate Bill 18, the capital budget, Senate Bill 19, operating, and Senate Bill 20, the comprehensive mental health operating and capital budgets. I understand these are the first formal hearings on these bills. I did provide the committee with an overview last week of the kind of summarizing at a high level those appropriation bills. I'll try to this morning not repeat a lot of what you have already heard, but I would like to go through and just kind of highlight some of the components of the bills, the structure of the bills, what's in them, and of course understand that your subcommittees will be dealing with those in some detail. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, on Senate Bill 19 is the proposed operating budget for fiscal year 2014. I have also asked the agency administrative directors to be in the room this morning in case there are specific questions that you would like addressed at the table rather than waiting until subcommittee. So I also provided the committee with a two-page summary of the operating budget. It shows you by department the funding sources, unrestricted general fund, designated general fund, other federal total, and also position counts that are included in the appropriation bills before you. I should note that that also includes the mental health operating portions of the bill. So these numbers are inclusive of both Senate Bill 18 and Senate Bill 20. It has a total for mental health of $240,891,000. So that's part of the numbers that are in front of you. So it's just a summary. So for your review, on page 2 of that handout is a comparison of the general fund, unrestricted general fund changes from the FY13 management plan to FY14 governor proposed. So that's just another view of the summary for you to take a look at.
What was that number for mental health? How much does it include?
Mr. Chairman, the mental health operating budget totals $240,891,600. Of that, unrestricted general fund is $205,921,200.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, of the total proposed operating budget, you'll see on the handout, it totals $9,795,200,000. The unrestricted general funds are just over $5.7 billion, roughly 59% of that total. Designated general funds, $777.4 million, roughly 8%. Other funds, $1,283,200,000, roughly 13%. And then federal funds of just over $2 billion at roughly 20% of the total budget. I mentioned earlier that we spent months preparing these budgets for you. We start in July, and it takes quite a bit of time to prepare those. And as you know, the supplemental bill will be introduced or read across tomorrow. Our budget amendments are due to you on the 30th day. So there's still a lot of budget work that continues throughout the year. The structure of this bill Mr. Chairman, is that Senate Bill 19 contains 36 sections and is 67 pages long. I'm just going to highlight what our some of these sections are. I'm not going to go through them piece by piece unless you have specific questions, but I know you have the bill in front of you as well. The first three sections are what's known as the number section of the bill. They begin on page 2 and continue through page 44. This particular section of the bill totals $6,741,149,600. These are organized by department and by appropriation and allocations within the department. You'll see in some particular components there may be specific appropriation language such as carry forward of program receipts and that type of thing. Sections 2 and 3 of the bill are really the different breakouts of the funding sources. Section 2 is funding sources by department, and Section 3 is the total of all funding sources for Section 1. Section 4 of the bill begins on page 45. This is known as the language sections of the bill. It includes several different pieces, Mr. Chairman. Language sections include funding for our various corporations, such as the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, Alaska Housing Finance, Alaska Permanent Fund, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. We have appropriations for the State Catastrophic Reserve and Working Reserve Funds, shared taxes under the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and other various items. Section 13 of the bill I wanted to highlight for you is on page 50, lines 3 through 7. Mr. Chairman, this is the particular appropriation for the $25 million for education that we spoke about earlier. This is specifically funding that was targeted for energy costs in school districts, but it is also allocated and distributed to school districts on the adjusted average daily membership. So I just wanted to highlight for you where that particular section was located in the bill in front of you. Another section to flag for you is section 20, which is on page 52, and this is known as the fuel trigger. This was put into place several years ago in an appropriation language. Rather than building ongoing costs into the base of agencies' budgets, the preference was to include a fuel trigger at different prices. Our estimate going into FY14 is at the $36 million number for the fuel trigger. We allocate those twice a year. Two departments based on the language that's included in this particular section. We have been doing a more thorough analysis on departments' fuel costs, fuel and utility costs, to try to make some suggestions as to whether or not this particular language should be changed.
You said there's 36 million?
$36 million, yes, Mr.
Where do
Chairman.
I find 36? I'm just a little confused. I'm looking at it.
Mr. Chairman, on page 53 of the bill, you'll see the allocation for based on $100 price per barrel or more of $18 million. That's distributed twice in the year, so that's what we're planning on in FY14. We've distributed, I want to say, roughly $7 million in the current year. Departments will be adjusting and giving us new estimates on their costs here very shortly. Mr. Chairman, Section 23 is our debt service obligations. It begins on page 55 and runs through page 60. This includes debt service and bond payments for previously approved debt. One of the largest components of this, as you know, is our school debt reimbursement program. That appears on page 59, lines 17 through 21. Our projection for FY14 of school debt reimbursement, and this is where a municipal school district has gotten voter approval to sell bonds for school projects, will be $128,263,143 in the FY14 budget. Section 24 on page 60 of the bill is what we call our federal and other program receipts language. This is LBNA language and addresses federal receipts as it comes into to the state and to state agencies. Section 25, Mr. Chairman, is on begins on page 60 and goes through line 62, contains a number of capitalizations for different funds. For example, disaster relief, we're requesting $5 million in state funds. The replenishment of the revenue sharing program at $60 million. Our oil and gas tax credits authorization, trauma care, drinking water, and clean water funds. So it's a variety of different fund capitalizations that come before you on an annual basis. Section 26, which begins on page 62 of the bill, is for fund transfers. And we have several funds. The largest, however, is, of course, the public education fund transfer. You will find that on page 62 of the bill, lines 26 and 27, and that's just under $1.2 billion to forward fund education. Section 27 is specific to the retirement system unfunded liability. You'll see that broken down into $312.5 million for the public employee retirement system, $316.8 million for the teacher's retirement system, and $4.5 million for the judicial retirement system. This is roughly a $20 million increase over the current year budget. Section 28 is language that comes before you annually to include the salary and benefits for various bargaining unit agreements in the University of Alaska in the appropriation bill. As we discussed earlier, currently we have the general government unit and the supervisory unit and the confidential employees all under negotiation, so we don't have numbers for those particular agreements until those negotiations are completed.
So these ones that aren't up, excuse me, up for negotiation, they're ratified year by year or budget by budget?
Mr. Chairman, we include the language in the budget to refer to all of the bargaining agreements that are ratified by their members. So this continues the ones that are already agreed to.
But the legislature has to approve them year by year?
Mr. Chairman, the funding for those, yes.
Okay. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we go back to Section 27, please? My question is, with the new requirements that the local governments have to declare on their balance sheets the liabilities of PERS and TERS, is there any contemplation by the administration to address this? I know I read in the Juneau paper that they have grave concerns about this, and I'm sure that other communities throughout the state are going to have additional concerns, and I'm just wondering if the administration has any plans to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman, that's a new requirement, and we have had several conversations about the issue of where the liability appears on financial statements. The individual communities who have the liability for those prior employees and the unfunded liability, or the state of Alaska. At this point, you know, the state of Alaska has committed to funding the amount over the current cap of 22% for PERS, public employees, and also the 12.56% for the teachers' retirement system. We have not finalized a decision on whether we would change the way we're going to present that on our state's financial statements, but at this point I think we're reflecting that full amount in the state's commitment to keep that funding level to pay that difference.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up, I guess my question is there communication between municipalities and the administration on the municipalities' concerns that they are going to show substantial liabilities and be in the red? And I'm wondering if the administration is working with any of those communities to see if there's anything that the state of Alaska can do to, other than paying it off, to address their concerns.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, the Department of Administration has been talking with Municipal League and other municipalities about this issue and how that will appear as a note on their financial statement and what that would potentially show for their financial statement. So it's, I think, a continuing conversation and one that the Department of Administration has been very engaged in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Ms. Rayfield.
Mr. Chairman, the Section 29 is on page 66 of the bill. Let me. Section 29 is for shared taxes to local governments and other entities, and you can see there's a number of things, the fisheries tax, fuel tax, cost recovery, and also the cruise ship for seven ports of call. So this is all appropriated under Section 29. Section 32 on page 67 of the bill is the budget reserve fund language, and this is language, Mr. Chairman, that would allow a draw on the statutory budget reserve should the revenue be insufficient in FY14 to cover the projected expenditures. Sections 33 and 36 are basically your lapsing provisions, retroactivity, effective dates, and those other things that we put in the bill. For the most part, there are a few things that would be retroactive. The majority of this bill takes effect July 1, 2013 for the fiscal year 2014 operating budget. Mr. Chairman, that I don't know that you need for me to go through some of the highlights again, but just to restate, the 14 operating budget includes full funding and forward funding for K-12 education, the Medicaid, and other formula programs, including public assistance, power cost equalization, our retirement unfunded liability and debt service payments that we're required to pay on an annual basis. Permanent fund appropriations for dividend and inflation proofing. We talked about energy assistance, both through the low-income heating assistance program and power cost equalization. And then I mentioned the tourism marketing in there at $16 million. And finally, we talked about the bargaining unit components that are still in a work in progress. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Rayfield. I got a couple of questions and a comment. One, if the members haven't gone through their ledge finance book, it goes through this language section piece by piece, and there's pretty thorough explanations in there. However, I'm not exactly straight on the a couple of funds in here, the catastrophic fund and the working reserve. If you could just kind of give us a narrative on that, flesh that out a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, we have appropriation language, and let me find that for you in the bill. But basically, there are two components of that. For the most part, we have both a reimbursable services agreement to pay for working reserve. Working reserve would be those things when you have terminal leave or leave cash-in for employees. So there's two pieces to that. There's a payroll deduction, and then there's also that's built into the rates and the budgeted positions that you see in the budget before you, and then a reimbursable services agreement. So what we have is language in the appropriation bill that would allow funds to sweep into working reserve and also the state catastrophic reserve, which is our risk management pool, at the end of the fiscal year to replenish those funds if needed. And so if we have, if there's an underage, you will see that language in the bill to be able to provide those additional funds.
And could you talk a little bit about the debt service? And you and I talked before, excuse me, before the meeting, and you don't exactly have the number that I'm about to ask for, so I just want to ask you if you could get to us the impact on the operating budget for years out, say to 2020 or whatever, of the 08, the 10, and the 12 GO bonds that were on the...
Mr. Chairman, yes, we can. Department of Revenue does put together a debt booklet that will contain those historical numbers for debt service and then projections, so we'll get that for you.
Okay, thank you. Committee members, questions? Senator Dunleavy?
Chair, thank you. Commissioner Rayfield, we had a presentation the other day that indicated that we were in receipt of approximately $2.7 billion in federal money, minus defense, obviously. Is there a way to find out how much state money is needed to support that $2.7 billion in federal money? In other words, is it just an addition to our budget, or do we have to come up with some additional state dollars to support those mandates? Is there a way to find out that issue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunleavy, absolutely. There are some, you know, particularly in the area of the capital budget for federal highway and federal aviation funds, there's a specific match requirement. In many of our operating programs, particularly the formula arena, there are specific matching requirements as well, or maintenance of effort requirements. So for the most part, the federal funds are linked to those state, the state contribution in some way or another, and we can get that for you.
The federal funds are linked to the states, or the states are linked to the federal funds? Who's driving? Is it the feds that are driving the state appropriations to support those?
Mr. Chairman, if the state, Senator Dunleavy, if the state has participated in a federal program, for example, federal special education funds or the Medicaid program, the state has agreed to commit a certain amount of resources in order to be able to achieve that or to receive the federal dollars.
Just one last to the chair. Commissioner, there appears to be a growing number of Alaskans that feel that the budget is growing and revenues are not keeping up with the budget. And so I guess the question would be, is there a plan on part of the governor's office or administration to come to this committee with down the road with some statutes that may be driving costs? Is there a discussion happening that, as opposed to just requesting additional dollars to fund the budgets, is there a discussion occurring inside administration to identify, again, statutes, regulations, et cetera, that we could take a look at that if change would actually reduce costs, the cost of government?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunleavy, what I can tell you is that the conversation that we have on an annual basis is, here in putting the budget together, as I described earlier, is we focus on what are those priorities that are established for us in the Constitution and in the statutes that we have. And focusing on those priorities, that's how we develop our budget. That being said, we are also looking at what we can do as an administration to minimize the increased cost and maximize efficiencies. Some of that might be within our own control to do in terms of some of the policy or the regulatory framework that we have implemented that provides some barriers or increases or somehow does not provide a very streamlined process. So we're taking it for what are the things that we can do to remove some of the barriers, to remove some of the costs, and actually deliver a service that we believe is important to you. I think that there is clearly some effort to look at the statutory environment as well, and if there are things that we can bring forward to you to suggest that there may be some things that we don't need to do any longer, or there may be some ways that we can modify this particular program with your help through statutory changes, that would be definitely something that we are looking at on an ongoing basis.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Rayfield. Senator Meyer, who handles the capital budget, because we're going to go through a fairly quick overview, had just asked me to chair the capital budget overview. So if you could move on to SB 18, Ms. Rayfield.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 18, the capital budget. I have, again, just provided for you just a one-page summary of the capital budget by our state agencies. Also, just to highlight for you, this does include the mental health capital items that you'll be talking about on Thursday. The mental health portion of this budget totals $14,050,000. Of that, $12,650,000 is our general funds. Mr. Chairman, the total capital, proposed capital budget for 14 that's before you for consideration totals $1,838,400,000. Of that, our unrestricted general fund request is $795,237,726, roughly 44% of the total budget. Designated general funds, $74,617,382, roughly 44%, and $56,580,928 of other funds, roughly 3%. Federal funds are $911,948,890,000, or 49% of the total budget requested. And just to highlight on designated general funds, as we talked about earlier, this would include, for example, the renewable energy grant funds. It also includes the regional education attendance area fund. Other funds include, for example, international airport and statutory designated receipts.
Ms. Rayfield?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to kind of follow up a little bit on Senator Dunleavy's question, the bulk of the federal funds here are for Department of Transportation, and that is a program that we do participate in. I think it's mostly for roads. We match 10%, and they provide 90%. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it is, yes, for federal highways and federal aviation, there's a matching component. Also included in there is Village Safe Water, which is a match component for about 45 or 50 million of for Village Safe Water projects that we match with about 8.5 million of state funds.
If I recall on the roads, it's a 90-10 split. It's a pretty good split in the sense that we don't have to participate too much, but they are driving this. But it's not a 50-50. It's a 90-10. I don't know about Village Safe Water and some of those others.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And then some of the other funds that we also leverage, for example, would be the requests before you for the municipal water and sewer projects. Those are locally matched with 50% local funds. So there are other ways that our state funds leverage other funds.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the federal funds, especially for the roads, haven't they been decreasing over the previous years?
Mr. Chairman, we saw an increase, of course, specific to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. I believe that DOT can probably give you a better answer to the question, but we have seen, even with some of the changes at the federal level, continuation of a pretty consistent amount of federal dollars proposed to come in to the state. What's changed is some of the allocations of that and how the federal program, what the federal program requires us to spend those funds on. And DOT can, I think, give you more information on that.
Ms. Rayfield?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate Bill 18 contains 14 sections. We'll just talk a little bit about the structure of the bill again. Sections 1 through 3 are the numbers section. In the capital budget, the section 1 is organized by department, and then the projects are listed in priority order within each agency, with the deferred maintenance request appearing at the end. The only exception to that is the Department of Transportation, and their request comes before you in more of a program area, and then the projects within that appear in alphabetical order. So they're a little bit different, but the other ones are in priority order. And in your, you don't have them in front of you today, but your committee book for the capital budget will have a listing of all of the projects in an order by reference number, and have the backup page numbers and everything on that, so it'll be easier for you to locate specific projects and the backup on those. Sections 2 and 3, of course, are just the funding sources for the appropriations in Section 1 by department, and then also just Section 3 is the total summary of the funding sources for Section 1. Section 4 on the bill begins on page 48. Those, again, are the federal and other program receipt language that you see in typically in the operating and capital budget for the what we call the LB&A provisions. Section 5 begins on page 48, lines 17 through 21. This is for fund capitalizations. We talked about earlier the AGIA reimbursement of $25 million is included in that particular section. Also, $2 million for the Emerging Energy Technology Program. This was a program that was created back in 2010. So far, the legislature has appropriated $4.8 million in state general funds that has captured $4.1 of federal funds, for the most part, through the Denali Commission. And these are for specific demonstration projects. Section 6 is a fund transfer section. That's on page 48, lines 22 through 25. This includes the $25 million of general funds into the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, which then we are proposing to spend for specific projects that I believe Alaska Energy Authority has presented you with a list of the round 6 projects that were evaluated on their list. And then $35,200,000 of GF to the Regional Education Attendance Area School Fund, and this is the fund that was created and has a formula linked to the amount of money that is available on an annual basis for school debt reimbursement for municipal districts. Section 7 is our section that has, it's on page 48, lines 26 through 30, is regards insurance claims. So if we receive a settlement for an insurance claim that are deposited into the general fund, it can be used for the catastrophic reserve risk management account. Section 8, Mr. Chairman, page 48, line 31 through page 49, lines 1 through 5, is the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska grants that come in annually. In FY14, they're estimated to be $3,945,000. These are funds that come from the sale, rental, bonus, royalties on leases issued within the NPRA, and they are available for appropriation for communities that are directly impacted by that. The Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development prepares the annual grant application process and review, and we typically bring those grants for your consideration in the amended budget, but we put the placeholder in for the dollar amount that's available. We have three reappropriations for your consideration, Mr. Chairman, starting with Section 9, page 49, lines 6 through 11. What we are proposing here is to reappropriate $1,750,000 from a project that was recently completed. The ACIAC Rural Power System Upgrade was completed for about $4.5 million. A portion of that was federal from the Denali Commission, so there is a balance in that project that we would like to reappropriate to a rural power system upgrade in, I'm not going to say this correctly, but Amatluk. Okay, thank you, Senator. And this would be to for them to be able to complete their project with the rural power system upgrade request. Section 10 is a reappropriation of balances in the Department of Environmental Conservation, and this is for the engineering and management of municipal water and sewer projects. There was a number of projects that are completed. The estimate, when you look in Section 10, the estimated balances available is around $359,000 that then DEC could use to continue to work on those particular municipal water and sewer projects. And then finally, in Section 11, we're requesting a reappropriation of approximately $2 million from the Kodiak Near Island Facility in the Department of Fish and Game to be redirected to the Department of Fish and Game's hunting and fishing licensing system. So that would be joined with a $775,000 general fund request that's in your budget. Section 12 of the bill are the lapse provisions that we have for the various sections, mostly relating to capital lapse provisions for reappropriations and fund transfers. Section 13 is that those reappropriations would be effective June 30 of this year, so the money would be available to reapprobe. And then Section 14 is the effective date of July 1, 2013, for fiscal year 2014's capital budget. I wanted to, Mr. Chairman, highlight a couple of specific funding sources that are included in this bill, because I'm certain that will be a topic of discussion for all of us. We are proposing to spend $120.2 million from the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation Fund. This fund was set up, I believe, back in 2006 with a $300 million appropriation. Over time, there have been other appropriations into that fund and interest earned. We believe that there are some very strategic investments that are needed to grow our economy, and that the use of these funds will help to do that. The $95.2 million we're requesting for the Susitna-Wautana project are proposed from that funding source, as is the $25 million for the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. So this would be a total of $120.2 million for your consideration in the capital budget, as well as the $125 million that we've discussed for capitalization of the SETS fund. That will be an amendment that you will see coming forward for the operating budget in the excuse me, in the fund transfer section. So excuse me, Mr. Chairman. So those are I wanted to highlight the use of those funds. Also, we have $20,745,000 for out of ADA dividends that we're proposing to spend for four projects. Three of them are under our Roads to Resources program, $8.5 million for Ambler, $7.5 million for the Dalton Highway, and the $2 million for our smaller Roads to Resources program, plus $2.745 million for the strategic minerals assessment. That's been an ongoing effort. The ADA dividends.
Senator Hoffman?
Do you have a location where those Roads to Resources projects are located in this budget?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly do for Ambler and for Senator Hoffman. We certainly do for Ambler and the Dalton Highway. The $2 million for the smaller program, DOT may have a list of those. Typically, those are small projects that we can do, for example, to a timber road or a smaller road, but we can get you some of those that are potential for that $2 million.
Thank you.
The HFC dividends, as you know, in the last couple of years, those dividends have been lower than we have been used to in the past. In the budget before you, the $10.6 million in HFC dividends is directed completely to their debt service. That's the first priority for their dividends. So you don't see any of their dividends going towards capital projects. It's all to debt service. I also wanted to flag that we're not proposing to spend any of the Alaska Capital Income Fund. That has a balance of just about $76 million, I believe, at this particular point in time. So, Mr. Chairman, just again to highlight the items that we included, the energy package we've talked about, Susitna, the SETS capitalization, weatherization, home energy rebates, and renewable energy. These are all, we think, significant projects for your consideration. The infrastructure, highways, aviations, village safe water, municipal water and sewer included. Under school construction, the Nightmute School, the $33 million, and then a shortfall in the Kunigak project is also requested before you. Deferred maintenance, gas line development, Roads to Resources, and our Chinook Salmon Initiative. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that was a quick summary, but.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. And thank you for that orientation. And I'll try not to get too far in the weeds, because I know we'll do that later. But you finished up with the schools, and I wanted to ask some questions about all the education facilities. Now, the two schools that you mentioned, are those due to the Kasaila case? Do they resolve the requirements from that case, or are these separate schools?
Mr. Chairman, the Nightmute is the next school that it was on the Kasaili list for funding in FY2014. It's a $33 million project, and so it continues our agreement under Kasaili. Nightmute is a project that was funded in 2012, I believe, and they just simply don't have the funds to complete that project. The next school on the Kasaili list is Kwikluk that will be brought before you in the 15 budget. That currently is on the Department of Education's list at $56.5 million. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, the last project on the Kasaili list is the Kivalina School. Kivalina, and that's one where, Mr. Chairman, the community is planning for relocation. So there will be, we don't currently have an active project for Kivalina, but I know they're working towards that.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Meyer.
If I can follow up then under Department of Education, the State Library Archives Museum Facility, SLAM, for $20 million. Now, is that complete, that project, or is this ongoing?
Mr. Chairman, the short answer is no, the $20 million does not complete the project. To finish the project will require $50 million. Clearly, the governor is very supportive of that project. We understand in the current environment that we'll just need to be working with you on the priorities for funding this session, but we're getting much closer to actually completing that project. As you know, it's been a very long time in coming.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, what I'm finding, being new to the capital budget side, there's a lot of projects that seem to be in progress, and it would be good, I think, to try to complete some of these so they're not just ongoing and we can actually get the work done on them. And another such project that's not on your list is the engineering buildings at both the UAF and UAA campus. I'm assuming they just didn't make the priority list, and you were trying to keep the list down. You're still supportive of the project, though, I would imagine.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we are supportive. I think when you look at many of the requests from the various departments, including the University of Alaska, there's a significant amount of work to do on existing buildings as well. So we were trying to come in again with those things that we felt that we could put before you, knowing that we're going to have a lot of discussion throughout the session about some things that may or may not need to be included this year.
Okay. Senator Hoffman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, the Kasaili lawsuit has been settled as far as I understand. It was settled last summer, and that was an ongoing lawsuit that lasted some 10 years, and we were glad to see the commitment of the administration to follow through with the additional schools under the new legislation. But going back to the weatherization program for a moment, last year we had testimony at this table that from the Housing Authority that they had some concerns that the lower amount, right around $50 million, put the workers that they have in there for mobilization potentially in jeopardy. And I'm glad to see that we still have an additional $50 million for the weatherization program and the home energy rebate program. But has that question been answered, whether or not the mobilization of the workforce to implement both of these programs, which are very, very popular in the state, in jeopardy?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, there has been a lot of discussion, of course, about the success of this program. I think people are very, very supportive of it, and it's done, you know, very good things for the communities that had access to it. We understand that there's a lot more demand right now than they're able to actually accomplish. However, they are continuing to do a remarkable amount with what they do have available to them. I've not had a report back that there's been a problem in terms of specific workforce. I do know that they've been very thankful for the amount of the employment in the communities that they're able to go in and do the work, because they are hiring local and being able to do a lot of work internally. So that's been helpful. Clearly, I think this is a success story and something that we are going to continue to support.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
No, I'll save it for later. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Ms. Rayfield. Appreciate it. We'll take a brief at ease. Thank you, Ms. Rayfield. Appreciate your time. For members of the committee, coming up this week, I think I mentioned it earlier, but we'll say it again. On Wednesday, we'll do the University of Alaska. Thursday will be the Mental Health Trust Authority, and Friday will be the Alaska Energy Authority. A few weeks from now, and this is something maybe the subcommittees want to look into, and I'll just kind of give a little bit of a warning for the administration. We're going to be inviting the administration to come and talk about the negotiations for the labor contract. And other than that, I would just encourage the subcommittees to meet and hold your overviews. And if possible, if you could have a quick report given on the overviews. Obviously, there will be a report that you will report out later on, but if we could just get a kind of an update on the overviews, if there are any rocks in the road that you may discover in the subcommittee process. And any questions or comments from members of the committee? With that, we are adjourned. You guys want to huddle up?